Hello there. Good to be back with you again for another Bernie Mikla show here on YouTube. Thank you again, as always, for your support. Appreciate all your comments, all your likes. Hit that like button. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family, your buds about the YouTube channel and ask them to subscribe. I mean, it doesn't cost anything to subscribe, you know, and, you know, whatever. You don't have to watch it either, but a lot of people are watching it, and I am truly grateful. I'm going to talk about Sonny Gray next in line as we and I discuss potential Cardinals trade pieces this offseason as they prepare for what would be a 2025 transition year. No, a little more than that. I would say it's a rebuild. How harsh of a rebuild depends a lot on what we've been talking about. How many of their big ticket guys, so to speak, will be with them in 2025? So people have asked me, and I understand because I'm curious too, like, what are we talking about here for the Cardinals in 2025? Is it going to be a particularly aggressive rebuild where they're just going to offload as much salary as they can and maybe pick up some prospects or young major leaguers, you know, in the process? Is it going to be a moderate rebuild, which I kind of sense it might be or will be if I had to guess? And that's all we're doing now is guessing. Bill DeWitt and Chaim Bloom and John Mozeliak haven't told me exactly what they're going to do. So we just have to wait. I have to wait just like you all have to wait. But we'll talk about it as activity stirs and things start to go down as far as action. So we're going to talk about Sonny Gray next, but first I wanted to mention, hey, take a good look behind you there, right? Right? Very dull background. Very dull background. No eye candy at all, unless you like those two radiators, which were original in this house. Those radiators in 1908. Yeah, still working great too. But they ain't much to look at, are they? So maybe tomorrow, maybe by tomorrow's video, you will have bookshelves to look at. And I'm going to put all hats on there, books, some little knickknacks, whatever I can round up. I'll even try to display my Vince Lombardi autograph. Oh, you won't be able to, like, you know, be able to read the signature or anything like that. But I'll point it out. Maybe I'll bring it to the desk and show it to you. So anyway, bookshelves. Huh? All right. Let's talk about Sonny Gray. Should the Cardinals trade Sonny Gray? Well, it's not that easy of a question. It's not that simple is what I'm trying to say. First of all, Sonny Gray has got a full no trade clause, so he can veto any trade. And he's kind of an independent mind fellow. And, you know, he reminds me of a guy like, you know, he's going to just kind of do what he has to. Thinks he has to do what's best for him and his family. And that's okay. That's why you get a no trade clause from the Cardinals. He agreed to it, or they agreed to it, I should say. He asked for it, they agreed to it. So a lot of this depends on what Sonny Gray wants to do, because there's nothing to talk about if John Mozeliak gives him a call and says, look, you know, we're going to be rebuilding. Well, we don't call it a rebuild. We're going to be resetting in 2025. And you know, out of respect to you, you know, are you okay with that? It might take a couple of years. And at that point, Sonny Gray's got to say, well, let me talk about it with my family and I'll get back to you. And he either says nope, or he says, okay, I'm open to a trade suggestion. But Sonny Gray would be able to sort of leverage that a little bit, because if the Cardinals want to offload a salary, or if they want to get a good package in return for him in a trade, Sonny Gray would be in a position, because he's got the no trade, he wouldn't be in a position to kind of steer this thing to where the teams that he would want to go to, or conversely, the teams, no way, I'm not going there, that type of thing. So he's got all the power. He's got all the control in this. And he not only can agree to a trade, but he can also largely control where the trade destination would be, right? All right, so Gray will be 35 next month, and he's got 2 years left on his contract. Now, this is where I'll use the Mozeliak word. Let's reset, okay, shall we? Sonny Gray signed a three-year, $75 million deal. It also includes a $5 million buyout for an option on 2027. So the thing, though, the Cardinals asked him to defer some money, quite a bit of money, in 2024. So instead of making $25 million, the Cardinals paid Sonny Gray $10 million. And that helped them out, although it didn't really get them anywhere as far as getting in the playoffs. But you look at what's left. See, because that money doesn't go away. Yeah, the money that he deferred, that doesn't go away. In fact, it's loaded into the final 2 years, at least of every single contract site that I like and respect. That's their information, and I believe that has been reported locally. So here's the deal. He'll go from $10 million in 2024 to $25 million in 2025. And then 35 million in 2026. That would be the end of it, unless if the Cardinals want to buy him out in 2027, they can. $5 million. He also has the right to just refuse that as well and just move on. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here. So if you're looking at it, if let's just say we include the buyout. So you're looking at two more seasons of Sonny Gray under contract, fully guaranteed, no trade clause, 2 years at $65 million. That's an average of $32.5 million per season. And again, that includes the buyout. If you strip away the buyout for whatever reason, I don't think there's any reason to do that. But even if there wasn't a buyout, they would owe him $60 million over the next two seasons. That's an average of $30 million, okay? So the cost of Sonny Gray is rising, and as I mentioned, he'll be 35 next month. So the Cardinals, here's where I'm a little conflicted, and again, this is all based on what he wants to do. He's calling the shots here. He has the contractual right to do so, and maybe he wants to just keep close. You know, one of the reasons he wanted to sign for the Cardinals, and it's a big reason, is because he lives in Nashville or the Nashville area with his family. And it really is a short hop to St. Louis. It's an easy drive. We've all made that, right? If we're sports fans, certainly going down there to see the Blues and the Predators, correct? Yeah. And back in the day, the Rams playing at the Titans. Anyway, it's all up to Sonny Gray, but the Cardinals, it's a lot of money for a team that's going to be rebuilding to some extent, maybe to a large extent. That's a lot of money on your books when you have a guy who, we'll talk about his 2024 season here in a minute, but you're talking about a guy who still got really good stuff, still is a really good pitcher. There was one thing about him this past season that was awful, and believe me, I'll get into that. You don't get the Pollyanna BS here. So if the Cardinals could offload that contract, maybe they pick up a nice package for him. I would think he'd be, based on pitching alone, I believe that there would be value there out in the trade market. But who knows for sure? I mentioned his age a couple times. Maybe teams look at that. Maybe they look at the fact that, well, he's a good pitcher, but boy, I don't know that we want to pay him $30 million on average over the next two seasons. And I don't know what these other teams that are interested in Gray would also demand the Cardinals pick up part of the tab. That's always a possibility in deals like this. The Cardinals have to eat some of the money, but they'd get a lot of money off their books. So I don't know what the Cardinals' priority is here. Now, let me, before you have a chance to type in comments, and I'll type them in anyway. A lot of you will say, and by the way, no pushback here. I'm not salty about this at all. But a lot of you say, well, of course they want to offload the contract because DeWitt's cheap. He doesn't want to spend any money. Well, I think he actually does want to spend a little money because, after all, he's the one signed off on this Sonny Gray contract, right? He spent some money there, certainly. That's another video for another day. All right. To get into that whole thing again. I'm not doing that today. But if the top priority is to offload that salary and also maybe, you know, pick up a promising prospect or two, or young major leaguer with a prospect or two in some kind of package, I cannot rate his value for you. So I'm not even going to try to be a phony and fake it. I just can't. Given the age and the salary concerns and the fact that he did have some elbow tendonitis late in the season, he missed about four starts with his minor injuries last season. So are the Cardinals that desperate to dump that salary that they would trade Sonny Gray and eat some of it to make the deal work for the other side? I don't know. Again, we're operating in the dark here. So what would I do? Would I trade Sonny Gray? Again, this is like the Wilson Contreras thing that we talked about. It's like the Ryan Helsley thing that we talked about. This is no different. The same thing applies. So when people ask me, well, you think they'll trade player A or B or C? My answer is, well, it depends on what they're offered, right? It really is that simple. So again, we're kind of operating in, you know, in a hypothetical world here. And it always should come down to what they're offered. Now, again, if the Cardinals want to just be out from under this contract, maybe they would be more motivated to take a lesser return for Sonny Gray. Some of you would not like that. I don't think I would like that. In fact, I wouldn't like that. I think the only reason you trade him, because after all, he's only under contract for two more seasons. It's not like you got a five-year, six-year deal still hanging here, right? And if the Cardinals want to be competitive, in other words, if they want to have a team where primarily they're going to give some opportunities to young starting pitchers, but also the younger core players they have with some others perhaps on the way in 2025 or 2026, whether it be Chase Davis or J.J. Weatherholt or any number of guys, they want to give more time to Sejasi and all the Cardinals that are kind of like waiting for full opportunities. That's the whole point of transitioning or resetting or rebuilding. You want to take a look at exactly what you have. Heim Bloom's going to be paying attention. Are these guys that we should really go forward with? Are these guys we should want to build around? And that is a big question. So the Cardinals are already down, assuming there's no kind of miracle last-minute change of heart on either side. The Cardinals will already be subtracting Paul Goldschmidt's $26 million salary from the books. So that eases the burden a little bit. They'll also probably not make some qualifying offers to some, you know, certain people. I don't know. Again, that we can talk about that when it happens or doesn't happen. So they're already in a position to offload some salary. So do you want to give the fans, do you want to give your customers? A lot of you have said, appreciated, have said, you know, I really don't mind seeing young guys go and, you know, to turning it over to them. And it sounds good, but I also always stop and think and say, you know, some of the guys we talk about, I don't know that they're, quote, young guys. Mason Wynn, young guy for sure, 22. Jordan Walker, still a young guy. Nolan Gorman, still a young guy. Pajes, still a young guy. Herrera, still a young guy. And I didn't mean to go through this like player by player countdown, but some of these guys aren't all that young. They're young because they got a lot of baseball left. But, you know, Brendan Donovan's not young per se. Lars Nootbaar, I think, will be 27. You know, so once you get past that 25 age group, age 25 group, you know, you're a youthful player. But it depends on how you all define young. It's, you know, Nootbaar started playing for the Cardinals in 2022, Donovan in 2022, Burleson got a look in 2022, little more in 2023, played a lot in 2024. Who am I leaving out here? You know, Gorman was brought up to the big leagues in 2022, all of 2023. Now we know what kind of season he had in 24, not so good. Jordan Walker is obviously still very young. And there might be some other players they want to look at, including Ivan Herrera. And we've talked about this. Could he play first base in part of a platoon system? I don't know. I do not know. That's for the Cardinals to decide whether his future should be behind the plate or maybe they see if they can turn him into a first baseman. if you're going into a moderate or somewhat more significant rebuild, isn't that the kind of thing you do, right? You're not realistically going to contend for anything that's meaningful as far as like making a postseason run or something like that. So isn't, if you know, if you're turning it over to younger players, isn't part of that deal, experimenting? And that's not conceding. It's setting your team up possibly for a better future. Because I'll give you an example. Suppose they tell Ivan Herrera to work on playing first base and Jose Oquendo works with him during the offseason, something like that, right? Well, that could be a major thing if he can handle it even in an average way, right? You don't have to be a great first baseman because you would get his bat in the lineup a lot. And it wouldn't necessarily be a platoon system because I could see Herrera playing, you know, most of the games at first base if he can handle it. You don't want him down there if he's going to make a fool of himself, right? Don't make the mistake you made with Jordan Walker where you never gave him any real developmental time to play right field and you rushed him to the major leagues before he was ready and you didn't even have a damn outfield instructor in the minor leagues to work with him. I mean, it's preposterous. But Herrera at first base is something that intrigues me, and I have no idea how the Cardinals see that, all right? But there are some young guys, and there's some young guys on the way, and I look forward to seeing what they can do. I look forward to seeing, hey, if Quinn Matthews, he'll barring any kind of physical setback, Quinn Matthews should be a Cardinal at some point in 2025. And I'll get more into the rotation here in a minute. So, all right. Does Sonny Gray have value just in terms of his pitching? I think he does. And I'll tell you about the good and the bad. There were a lot of good things last season. When he started a game, the Cardinals were 17-11. When he didn't start a game, they were two games under 500. One thing about Sonny Gray, too, when he worked with Wilson Contreras, his ERA was outstanding. Oh, wait a minute, Bernie. That can't be right. Contreras is the worst defensive catcher in the history of baseball, organized baseball. Sonny Gray established pretty good chemistry with Wilson Contreras. So there's some good things there. If they're going to keep Contreras, they're a good battery working together. But let me go over this now. As far as how he fared among major league starting pitchers last season, Sonny Gray. His ERA, 3.84 was higher, obviously, than what he did when he finished second in Cy Young Award American League with the Twins in 2023. So that would rank 36. But if you think about that, is that something we should disparage him about all that much, if at all? There are 30 teams, right? So if he's number 30, he was number 36 in ERA, well, that means he would be considered a high number two starter, right? Many of you, tip of the cap to you, called that in advance. He's not a true number one, but he's a number two. Well, he pitched like a number two last year. And, it's nothing wrong with having a number two, a good number two. The other thing is about, and I know some of you don't like the fancy pants stuff, the stats, and that's all right. No offense taken, but I offered up. His fielding independent ERA last season was 3.12. That was seventh best among major league starting pitchers, regular starters. His fielding independent ERA, in other words, stuff that he can control, right, was better than Zach Wheeler, Seth Lugo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Max Fried, Jack Flaherty, Corbin Burns, Pablo Lopez, Michael Wacha, Shota Imanaga, Kevin Gausman, Sean Manea, Nathan Eovaldi, and more and more and more. So I think some people like overreacted at some of his really bad starts. Oh, this guy's like a third, number three or number four star. I don't know if anybody said that, but there was a lot of grumbling. He's a pretty damn good starter. He was 27th in win probability added. And so when you look at the fact that there are 30 teams and all of them have starters, 27 in terms of win probability added would actually put him in the category of a little like borderline number one starter. His strikeout rate per nine innings last season, just under 11 per nine innings, number two in the majors behind Chris Sale. His overall strikeout rate in terms of not just per nine innings, but just what the people that come to plate against you, plate appearances, how many of them do you strike out? He struck out 30.3%, tied second best in the majors last year. That's really good. That's really good. He had the seventh best strikeout walk ratio among starting pitchers. His whip, walks and hits per inning, was 12th. His quality starts were down there a little bit, but again, he missed out on about four starts, and that influences that a little bit. So what's the rub? Why did some of his numbers go the wrong way, so to speak? And I don't think too many of them did. By the way, that, for example, that 3.84 ERA, you know, it was a better ERA than Aaron Nola, who's a guy that a lot of us was, so if he was available, he never was available. He wanted to stay in Philly, and the Phillies paid him. But just like, you know, Aaron Nola was like, you know, we were all depicting him as like, you know, vintage form Chris Carpenter or something. So Gray outpitched him in both strikeout rate, standard ERA, and fielding independent ERA. I just think I'm going through all this because I think we were irritated with Sonny Gray to an extent with some things, and I'm gonna get to that thing next. But I think it causes us to maybe not realize how good he was in 2024. Didn't say he was an ace. He's a really good starting pitcher, though. Really good. All right, here's the problem with his 2024 season. And I went through this a lot, writing about it at Scoops Network. I may have thrown this in a video along the way when I first started doing these. At Busch Stadium, Sonny Gray was fantastic. 16 starts. He had a 2.79 ERA. He allowed a 315 slugging percentage and a 208 batting average. And of course, a bunch of strikeouts. And when he pitched at Busch Stadium, he allowed five home runs in 16 starts. And that was an average of 0.5 home runs per nine innings. That is superb. You can't ask a starting pitcher to do better than that. All right, but let's flip the page. Let's flip the page. Hear the sound effects? I'm not actually flipping the page. Sonny Gray was one of the worst road pitchers in the major leagues last season. And the thing that puzzles me is that this has not been the case in his career. There was one time early on in his career where one season he had a really bad road ERA, but he's actually been really good. You know, coming into this season, his career ERA on the road was about 3.12. And the slugging percentage they allowed, there was nothing that you look at and you say, wow, that's really bad. He's been a really good road pitcher. And Busch Stadium is certainly a good track for him, a good yard, because it kind of suppresses home runs, right? But you still got to make great pitches, right? He was so bad on the road last year. 12 starts, a 5.2 ERA, 5.20. That ranked 90th among 101 pitchers that worked at least 12 starts on the road. So he had the 90th ERA on a list of 101. He gave up 16 home runs on the road, tied for the eighth most in the majors. His home run rate on the road was two home runs per nine innings on average. That was the fifth worst home run rate allowed on the road by a major league starting pitcher. The slugging percentage against him on the road last season, 509. Yikes. Ouch. That was 95th on a list of 101 starting pitchers that had at least 12 road starts. 95 out of 101. It was bad. It was bad. But I keep searching through, you know me, research nerd. I keep going through a lot of things trying to find out, well, why did this happen? Sometimes things just happen. It's true. There's randomness in this game. And maybe this was one of these really bizarre outlier things. Because again, coming into this season, Sonny Gray had been a really good pitcher on the road during his career. This has not been a pattern. This has not been a trend. The only couple of things that, and by the way, let me correct myself, 3.21 road ERA before this past season. That's still very, very good. And less than a home run per nine innings, 0.7 homers per nine innings on the road before 2024. Batting average all those years before he joined the Cardinals on the road, 225. Slugging percentage, 336. So all of a sudden, he goes from allowing less than a home run per nine innings on the road, which was his standard career form until 2024. Then it's two home runs per nine innings on the road. And he goes from having a 336 slugging percentage allowed before he signed with the Cardinals to 509. I mean, this is drastic stuff. And listen, a guy striking out 30% of the hitters, and he's got a good, you know, whip, wins, average walks and hits per nine innings. He's got really good stuff. Is this just a fluke outlier? Did it just so happen when his turn to pitch on the road, you know, a lot of times he didn't have his best stuff or whatever? The only thing I can see, and going through all this data using the StatCast stuff, is that he allowed 16 road home runs, right? And if you look at this, 14 of the 16 came from the fastball family of pitches, which would be the four-seamer, the sinker, and the cutter. He allowed six road home runs on the four-seam, six on the sinker, and two on the cutter. They weren't doing anything against his off-speed stuff, his breaking pitches. That those things weren't getting slammed around on the road. I don't want to bore you with this too much as far as, you know, details, but a lot of it is as simple as this. I ask you to trust me with the information because I did look it up this morning. I spent a lot of time. 11 of those 16 home runs were like hard of the plate, right? 14 were in the strike zone. So Sonny Gray made the mistake, or maybe his location was off, but in effect, he grooved way too many pitches right down the middle or close to it. And like, for example, they hit eight home runs on him on either the sinker or the four seam on pitches, meatball pitches right down the middle, the meatball, the most hittable pitches there are. And left-handed batters beat him up pretty good on the road. But I look at this and I wonder, okay, is there some big secret here? Is there something that I'm missing? I don't think that there is. I mean, simplistically stated, I think he grooved way too many pitches when he was on the road, less than he did at Busch Stadium. He just made too many bad pitches, and I think he was overly dependent on that four-seam fastball and that sinker. And that kind of got him in trouble. I think he became predictable. I was surprised by how little he used the sweeper, which is a hell of a pitch on the road last season. But I actually do believe, and listen, I got no reason to be a Sonny Gray apologist here, okay? But when you look at a guy who's had a lengthy career and you see how great he pitches at Busch Stadium, and then all of a sudden after a terrific set of numbers, his career pitching on the road, everything goes boom. One year, a year where he still struck out 30% of the batters he faced, tied for second in the majors. Sonny Gray is still a really good pitcher. So if I'm going to get hung up on he was awful on the road in 2024, he was. But I don't think that's a lasting thing. I don't think that's a pattern or a trend that's going to hold. I think it was kind of flukish, and he had a lot to do with that. He just made bad pitches. So if you look at the Cardinals' rotation possibilities, and again, we're operating in the dark here because we don't know how aggressive they'll want to be. But if they keep Sonny Gray, they will at least have Gray at the top, Eric Fetty there. And by the way, I'm not saying this is the 1970 or 71 Baltimore Orioles where they had 420 game winners. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you're going into a rebuilding type situation, but you want to win enough games to make it interesting, well, you got to have some good starting pitchers. So if you look at their rotation as of now, if they keep Gray, Fetty, Pallante, I think Michael McGreevy's going to get a good shot. I'd like to say, well, the Cardinals will be able to offload Miles Michaelis and Steven Matz. Those two next year, Michaelis and Matz, are going to make a combined $51 million. $51 million. Again, I bore you with this, I know. It ain't how much you spend. It's how smart you are when you spend it, okay? Maybe they can offload Michaelis. I don't know. I mean, he does throw a lot of innings. He does make a lot of starts. Maybe a smarter organization can get him to he throws too many strikes because his stuff is really hittable. That's a big problem. Matz, I don't know. And yet, it's silly for me to think there's a market for either one of these guys, but never say never, especially if the Cardinals are willing to eat some of their salaries. But if you look, you got Gray, Fetty, Pallante, we all want to see more of McGreevy in 2025. It's going to be like the perfect showcase for that. And then we're going to see Quinn Matthews up here next season. Tink Hentz, I'm not sure. He gets hurt a lot. Not drastic injuries. But there's always two or three things every year, and it's kind of slowed his progress. But Tink Hentz has got wicked stuff. Who knows? He could be up here at some point in 2025. And you know who's kind of gotten lost in all this? And I'm not saying we should consider him like, oh, boy, that guy's a great prospect. No. When's the last time any of us, including me, ever talked about Zach Thompson? If you want to see how incompetent the Cardinals have been handling pitchers, young pitchers, there you go. Zach Thompson is Exhibit A. Oh, he's a starter. No, he's a reliever. Oh, no, he's a starter. No, he's a reliever. Back and forth. Memphis, St. Louis, starter, reliever, back and forth. They don't know what he is. And it's not like he just got here. You know, and I think Zach Thompson's got good stuff. My point is, where does he figure into this, if at all, for 2025? If this is going to be a rebuild of some sort, well, isn't that the time you take a really good look at Zach Thompson? Just to be certain about who he is and what you have in him? I don't know. You tell me. To use a Talking Heads lyric, you know, stop making sense. They stopped making sense a long time ago with some of this stuff. So the Cardinals have a big decision to make, but if they want to try to be respectable, there are worse things in the world, obviously, than to keep Sonny Gray in 2025. Maybe you could flip him at the deadline in 2025. I don't know. Maybe teams will be knocking on your door this winter, texting Mo, emailing Mo, and saying, you know, we really want to talk to you about Sonny Gray. Maybe they'll get an offer or two that they think, wow, that's pretty damn good. We should take that. I can't predict what they're going to do. So if you're looking for hard and fast, correct answers, I don't have a crystal ball and I'm not a soothsayer. A lot of this will depend, as I mentioned at the top, a lot of this will depend on exactly what is offered to the Cardinals for Sonny Gray. And if he wants to go, because he gets to call all the shots here because of that no trade. But a lot of money for Sonny Gray the next 2 years. And I want to know how that'll influence the Cardinals' thinking. And number two, actually, this should be number one. What does Sonny Gray want? What's Cardinals' priority? What's Sonny Gray's priority? That's the only two things we know we can say for sure as far as like setting the priorities, whether you trade him or not. The player's got a lot of say in that. The Cardinals can explore deals, but in the end, Sonny Gray's going to go, as I said, thumbs down or okay, we'll do that. Anyway, I've rambled enough. Thank you, as always, for watching. I love doing these for you. Hopefully some bookshelves tomorrow. Anyway, have a great rest of the day, and thanks for your support here on the Bernie Miklas Show channel on YouTube.